Welcome to the podcast. As a listener, you're invited to claim your comp pass for our next live full-day Software Oasis virtual AI event with the world's top B2B AI experts. By attending, you'll join our engaged community of founders and executives from over 200,000 leading B2B global organizations. AI won't take your place, but a competitor leveraging it to drive results will. Learn the latest in AI first Thursday of every month. Tap green button at softwareoasis.com or use show notes link to secure your pass. I'd like to welcome everyone to this week's edition of the Consulting Spotlight. My name is Michael Bernzweig. I'm your host and the founder of Software Oasis. This week, we're actually being joined live by Bill Douglas. He's the CEO of OpticWise. And with that, Bill, welcome to the Consulting Spotlight.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. It definitely gets busy in technology, so I really appreciate you taking the time out with us. For some of our listeners, we actually had a nice amount of questions come in, but and we'll try to get to some of them. But I was hoping maybe you could share with us a little bit about your journey getting to where you are and a little bit about OpticWise.
You mean about my personal journey?
Yeah, getting to where you are.
Brings on a smile. My friends call me a resilience guy because I've had the interesting path of getting here. I've had a couple of near-death experiences, which made me realize the first time I didn't want a corporate job, and it was time to really become a real entrepreneur and throw away my W-2 and, you know, put your neck on the line. Started a company, and that was over 30 years ago. So I've been a lifetime entrepreneur since. This is my sixth company. I really, really enjoy the early stages of companies where you can pivot and be nimble and create solutions fast after listening to customers. Sure. I love that part. Usually recruit people that don't necessarily have to have all the structure. Like some people like full structure and they like to execute. Some people like to know where we're going and they help build the path. So I keep the vision going straight, but I rely heavily on everybody to do their part and contribute to the team. And I love building that part of it. So OpticWise does data and digital infrastructure services for large commercial real estate projects, specifically office buildings and apartment buildings. So we run all the networks in a building. We'll do the managed Wi-Fi piece. We'll aggregate the data and run machine learning across it. We'll do a lot of different things with data and digital infrastructure. So we're a technology / thought leader. And we quietly run around in the commercial real estate world. I
love it. And there's quite a few pieces of commercial real estate out of, as you look across the nation and around the world. So,
the past four years has been an interesting ride since the pandemic.
That as well. But so what was it that originally, caught your attention about PropTech and IoT and, the whole space?
Well, I got out of my last company in 2015. And in between companies, I always go back to consulting entrepreneurs. And Drew Hall had started OpticWise. It's been 21 years ago now, but it was about 12 years old when I joined the company. And I consulted with him to give him a go-to-market plan to think about how to grow it. And I'm greatly summarizing this story.
Sure.
He'd take 3-month engagement and deliverable was the go-to-market. And he said, I'm a technology guy. And, everybody here, we just deliver solutions to, then they were doing on-campus student housing or just off-campus, but not selling to the big REITs. And I looked at it and fell in love with it because it was taking technology into an old stale industry, commercial real estate. They're really good at building buildings and operating buildings, but not so good about embracing technology. Now that's just the way that runs. And while it looks great, it's a bit antiquated on the technology side. So I saw recurring revenue and I saw a large market, and we had some prospects that were willing to give us an award if we could deliver. So I said, I'm in, I'll take it. I'll do it. I'll drive the bus. as I say. Sure. You know, when you run a company, your job is to not just to get the team all focused, but also to keep them in the right lanes, because overlap in lanes is just wasted effort. So we all started marching towards the common goal of serving the client who owned this big property, our first customer, after we got rid of all the other ones, our first real customer, listening to them and solving a solution. So they held our feet to the fire and didn't pay us until we delivered, and we took the bet.
I love it.
And it's been a pretty interesting and fun 8-year ride since.
So what would be an example of a specific type of engagement? If you want to share a specific client or just a general example of a client to give our audience an idea so they can kind of wrap their head around what you do there.
All right. So say you own an office building, the same applies to apartment, but say you own an office building, it's 150, 200,000 square feet, and you have 12, 15, 20 different tenants in it. In an apartment building that size, you're probably going to have 100 tenants, 100 apartments, 150 apartments. Nonetheless, the numbers are the numbers, but you have many tenants in one building, and the tenants are used to buying from an ISP, their internet service, their Wi-Fi, their mobility, and you have to run all of these systems in the building. So there's going to be access controls. There's going to be heating ventilation controls. There's going to be video security. There's going to be elevator systems and telephony all over the property. And those are just some easy ones. Occupancy sensors, yeah. Parking controls, EV chargers. So you have to run your building and you have to service your tenants. So instead of having nobody run the building as far as the network goes and having each tenant contract specifically with an ISP to bring in their own internet circuit and stand up their own Wi-Fi, we put up a mesh Wi-Fi network. So every tenant still has their own network, even though it's a shared infrastructure. Like you and I can drive down the road in the same car and we each have our phone number. That is my network. You're on your network. We're sharing the infrastructure. So we applied the same methodology inside of a large commercial real estate building. So the tenant can go anywhere, not just in their apartment or their office space. They go anywhere on the property and they're still in their own network.
That's brilliant.
So if you rented a space in an office building, your employees would be on your firewall behind your security rules, no matter where they were on this entire property. You wouldn't have an employee sitting at the coffee shop in the first floor on a VPN or, God forbid, on a guest network, vulnerable, right? So, and then on the other side, you have 12 to 15 systems to run a large building and anywhere from 8 to 10 different networks. So we started aggregating the physical networks and then connecting to these 8 or 12 systems and collecting data. So instead of being 12 disparate data sets, it's one aggregated data set. And then you can start running machine learning across it to create your own business intelligence based upon your rules. So we focus on operations and we focus on revenue generation. And by revenue generation, it's what do the tenants want? How can you use technology? In an apartment, they might want a smart thermostat. They might want a door lock where that their phone could work on instead of a key.
Right.
You know, that all has to be integrated physically. So we're not selling them the key system, but the key system still needs to talk to some system somewhere. It could be cloud. It could be on-prem.
Right.
There's a lot of variables in this. And then on the operation side as well, you have the challenge of reducing utilities and reducing insurance. And both of those come with the need to see data. So who owns your digital infrastructure and who owns your data is what I say to owners all the time, because those questions lead to great conversations. And if you're a tenant, I'd say, you know, when you leave your apartment or you leave your office building, how much productivity do you lose? How much privacy do you lose? So we're big on privacy. We don't collect any user information. We believe whatever you do in the virtual world is your business. So
makes good sense.
And our clients who own the properties can then market that in their leases. The second you sign your lease, Mr. Tenant, your connectivity is included anywhere on the property. The second you sign your lease, this, and then they can go back to their insurance providers and their bankers and say, look, we know what we have in our property. We know how it operates. We know if there's a water leak. We know if it's packed. We know if it's a warm day. We know if something's about to break down. All of that, because you can see the data.
So it's just all the details that a modern organization is looking for baked into one solution turnkey sounds very...
Well, Michael, you have a... Look at other industries like transportation or manufacturing or distribution. Like, do you think Amazon would let anybody else, any other vendor, be in their warehouse putting a different network up and keeping the data to themselves? You say, of course not. Well, commercial real estate does it all the time. They give a contract to a vendor and the vendor puts in a network and then the vendor keeps the data. It is staggering. The data is so valuable. But these apartment owners and office building owners are used to a way of doing it that's just antiquated. That's all. And the adoption of technology has been slower in that realm. There are definitely some leaders, but it's by far a minority of the market. So that's the market we serve.
So a good question for an owner that might be reaching out to you for the first time. What does the onboarding look like? How do you, help them get from where they are to where they could be? Like, what's the process look like?
The process starts with an audit. We do a data and digital infrastructure audit. And this could be on a brand new building with plans, or it could be on an existing building we could walk and touch. And we want to identify all of the systems you have and all of the networks you have. So whether it's a physical or a virtual system, and whether it's a physical or a virtual network, and where's the data, where's the system, where's the network, who owns each and who controls each. And then we work on aggregation. And aggregation is built about resilience. So how reliable is it? And control. Like, where is this data? And even if you agree to let some vendor have it, you need to have real-time access to it. And you need to clarify that you own it. Same thing with a system in your building. If I am paying for my access control system, why don't I have control of it? But you'd be surprised how many times the answer is no, or no, we don't have control of it. We own it, but we don't have control of it.
I love it.
Now, so when it comes time to renew a vendor contract, you're at a weakened position. So that starts with an audit just to know where you are. So then we clarify where you want to go. And in between, there are so many factors. It has to do with manpower. It has to do with budgets. It has to do with class of the property, time frames, tolerance for CapEx. What are your goals to reduce OpEx? So all of those factors determine what the solution is. And then there's an implementation plan.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously it's a substantial undertaking. It's not something that happens.
It doesn't have to be. We've retrofitted buildings before and put one device on site to connect to physical systems and started collecting data. And we all agreed to wait 6 months before we even looked at the data, because you have to have some history to see trends. So we just started collecting data, and that was very inexpensive. And at the same time, the on-site personnel had an engineering team to call up and say, hey, what about this? Or, hey, we're looking at this. And all of that consulting is included with any of our engagements. So all of a sudden they had a technology partner that was trusted. Because our goal is to make them more money. The more money we make our clients, the longer we stay around.
And that was my other question. So for a small property owner versus a larger property owner, what are the advantages to, partnering in this way and taking control of all of this infrastructure and data?
Well, regardless of the size of the building or the size of the portfolio, as you said, small owner, I didn't know if you were referring to the size of the holdings they had or just the size of the physical building. Regardless, if you have control of it and you generate income off of it, it shows as genuine income, as net operating income, which divided by the cap rate impacts your value tremendously, your asset value. So you want to own your infrastructure so that you can generate more income from it, as opposed to if it's the third party vendor like an ISP and you get 5 to 6% of whatever they're selling, that's ancillary income and it's discounted. Right. So it's not true income. It doesn't hit your, and it's discounted as well because it's about 20% of what you should get if you did it yourself. So you're used to Mr. Commercial Real Estate Owner, Mrs. Commercial Real Estate Owner, you're used to putting money into carpet and windows and common areas. And if it's an apartment building, maybe countertops and nice finishes, lighting in an office building, you're going to maybe have a kitchen on every floor, things like that. You're used to investing in that. I'm asking you to consider investing in your own digital infrastructure because the returns are significant. Don't just look at sticks and bricks. look at digital as an investment. And their clients, the prospects that open their eyes and say, I like that conversation, let's pursue it, turn into clients. But there's plenty that just say, no, we don't do it that way. We rent space.
Right.
But there are tenants, as you well know, because you rent space. Tenants sure. walk in and they want all of this ready for them. They want space as a service. And they want an apartment that's ready. That doesn't matter where I am. I could sit by the pool and work from my laptop on my network right next to somebody else who can't see me. I'm virtually behind a firewall in a VLAN, completely separated, very secure, very private. And I could carry my phone down the hall and do a Wi-Fi call. Like, I don't have to be just on my network. I don't have to buy any hardware either. It's included. It's all there.
So that's a big draw. It sounds like it's a turnkey solution. I mean, it sounds like you're managing everything for their organization.
It's a turnkey solution, and you have the ability to pick whatever vendor you want relative to those operating systems.
Okay.
Like, we're just going to connect and collect on those operating systems and divulge the data because it's your data, not ours. We're not going to sell you that on the managed Wi-Fi and on the infrastructure. Like maybe you need to wire out your leasing office space. So you're still going to own the infrastructure, but we're going to design that in-house and that in-house.
Okay.
So relative to direct connectivity, wired or wireless, we're not going to parse that out. But it's your building, right?
You have a lot of options.
Any of the other systems you want. Maybe you like this lighting control. For this size property and for that size property, you want this one. Okay. We can do both. We can connect to both and collect the data on both and show you the data. But if you could see your lighting data versus your occupancy data, maybe it would make you turn down the lights quicker instead of just what's programmed. The room is empty. The building is empty. It's a holiday. Yeah, but it's still a Monday. Okay. Why is it all lit up? Why am I paying for that? Why am I cooling it when it's empty? And if it's crowded, why aren't I changing the parking prices? Or even if it's empty and I know that there's an event going on across the street at this venue, why don't I change my parking rates? Why don't I make more money from that?
Yeah, so you're really, really helping the owners find efficiency in every last area.
Absolutely. And the only way you can do that is with data. And to have the data, you have to have control of your digital infrastructure. So that was a long answer to why would you want to own it? Because your hands are tied if you don't.
Yeah. Now, on the flip side, you alluded to something at the beginning of our conversation. Obviously, it's been a rough few years for commercial real estate. And what types of pivoting and things have you seen? Has it made your solution even more important and valuable to the owners that are still in the space, or has it been a challenging, you know, few years in terms of clients, or what are you saying?
The only challenge that we've felt is that some of the projects that were being built took longer because of supply chain. You know, it took a long time to get lumber and concrete for a while, and then labor had to catch up post pandemic. But our clients, remember, are more on the early adopter phase of technology in commercial real estate. So I'll give you two examples. The pandemic really helped the apartment market overall. People started moving all around the country, and interest rates and property values, residential property values went through the roof. So the rental market spiked. We saw a lot of apartments come online, more than 500,000 a year for the past 3 years, come online across the country. Those are just new, not to talk about the 30 million in inventory. So, our solution is completely private and completely secure. Like, one of our fun stories to tell is during the pandemic, Wells Fargo had an employee that moved into one apartment complex that we had as a client. This is in 2020. And they told all their employees to take home their machines because they were trading mortgages in the office and the office is being shut down. So they gave them the physical workstation and said, go home and work. And you'll have to use this, and this, and have to have a VPN and tunneled. Well, the tenant called us our customer support lineup and said, I have this problem to solve. Well, within 2 days, they had the CISO of Wells Fargo write off and say, this is fully acceptable. Anybody in this building can just work from their computer because we pinholed the firewall and made any Wells Fargo employee have a direct path through the firewall to Wells Fargo. So no VPN needed. And they were completely on board with it. They moved about a dozen apartments full of people there. They rented the apartments just so the people could go there and work during the day. They didn't care where they lived. Yeah. So the fact that it was secure and private and had been wrung out by Wells Fargo was really, really a cool thing. On the office side, the biggest changes are, you know, if you have the same size building and all the tenants are turning, or if you have a new building coming online, instead of expecting, say, an average of 5,000 square foot per tenant or 10,000, whatever the average is, you know, if your building was expecting or had 10 tenants, 5 years later, it's going to have 13 to 15 tenants. It's going to have somewhere between 30 and 50% more tenants, even though the space didn't change. So when business tenants are renewing office leases, what they're doing is downsized because their employees are coming in 3 to 4 days a week now instead of five. So they could use 20 to 40% less space. So think of the challenge as an owner to get all of more spaces, more tenants integrated. But the beauty, if you have the solution that I laid out, you can say it's ready today and you already own the infrastructure. The tenant could move in faster, as fast as they could change the walls and do the tenant improvement they need to. The technology is already baked in. And they're doing more retail first floor, like coffee shops and meeting rooms. They're building in more conference rooms that are shareable. So tenants don't have to build a conference space and pay full rate for it if they're only using it, you know, 5 hours a week. It's just wasted space in somebody's office. They didn't need the conference room.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of changes like that. Businesses are making their footprint smaller, but they're definitely making people come back to work more. That started last fall with the Fortune 1000. And then the government started to do it. And now basically all businesses that we know of, not I shouldn't say all, but a majority of businesses now are saying you have to come back to the office 3 to 4 days a week at least. And that is driving tenants back to what we used to say, dark space. You know, empty space in an office building is costing somebody somewhere. So landlords have lowered their rates and invested a lot of money into antiquated properties, trying to make them attractive at lower lease rates for the companies that are coming back. So we've seen a lot of dynamic shifts, not just little things, big shifts in the past 4 years.
Sure. Absolutely. Seismic shifts.
That was a long answer, but those two examples are, it's just the beginning of many, but those two are basically bellwethers for each industry. Technology is needed by both of them.
Now, I know a lot of our listeners may be familiar with IoT, but, you know, I noticed that optic-wise, you have what you're calling building of things. Strategy. Yeah. Now, is that a specific phrase coined by OpticWise, or is that something that's more prevalent in the industry, or talk about it?
We do own that trademark, and it came from a conversation. It was a long time ago with a client, and I said, "You know what the Internet of Things is, right, sir?" And he said, "Yes." And I looked at his chief operating officer, and I said, "Do you understand, ma'am, what that is?" And she said, "I've heard of it, but I don't really know what it is." And I said, "Okay, so you've got," and I tried to explain the Internet of Things, all these sensors. And I said, "But you have a building," and this was a large building, 350,000 square feet. You have a building, and it's full of people, it's full of devices, it's full of systems. And I said, "Right?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah, I know, because I see all the bills, I see all the contracts for our property." And I said, "Well, those are all things, they're just connected. But like your access control system, because they had many doors on the property and there are portions inside that are locked out, probably has 150 things, right? Your HVAC system has about 4,000 things because we manage their whole network and we can see all the devices." She said, 4,000. I said, "Yes, you have all these little sensors and these inline duct turns. And then you're taking temperature and air quality and pressures, and then your plumbing's got this." I said, "That is a building of things. It's a building full of things."
We jokingly said
we should trademark that. So on the way home from that meeting, I called our attorney and said, "Could you file this trademark?" And we've been using it ever since. And our clients all use it too. They market it as a BOT building.
Yeah.
And because as part of the service, they can use any of our trademarks. If they're a client, they can use any of those. And there's a 5S user experience. There's a security infrastructure and connectivity. And then there's a building of things. But building of things is really a strategy. SIC is the physical side. 5S is the user experience. And yes, there are 5S's, but we don't really want to get into that. That's the ubiquitous wireless connectivity solution I mentioned.
So can you talk a little bit about your commercial firewall and the NOI capture platform and how all of this, you know, leads to additional revenue streams for property owners? Mm-hmm. Like what are the revenue streams? Can you bullet point some of it for us so that they can really wrap their heads around it?
Absolutely. Commercial firewall was a way to try to explain what our clients have the ability to do versus people that don't take this strategy, you know, ours or our competitor's strategy of doing this. So we drew a building and had all of the vendors on the building trying to sell to their tenants. Like you have internet providers, you have you have video providers, you have all these vendors trying to use the digital infrastructure in your building. Apartment, there's less vendors than office. Office, you're going to have telephone providers. You know, you're going to have hosting providers. You're going to have data center providers. You're going to have all these things that a business more than likely is going to buy. Well, why are you letting all of these vendors mine your tenants? Why aren't you providing those services? So we believe that you should hold the tenants off. I mean, not the tenants, excuse me. You should hold the vendors off at the main point of entry for the building. And in the technology world, every building has a main point of entry. It's where they all funnel through. It's typically where the internet comes in from the street. Everything aggregates there. It's at the main closet for the building.
Sure.
If you keep the vendors there and you distribute their services through the building on your network, then not only can you make money off of it, but you can save the tenants money. So you look more competitive. Your rents are the same, mind you, but you look more competitive because you're helping them save money. And you're aggregating that buy and spreading it out among your tenants and taking some piece of it. So we share that with you, Mr. Owner, and we save your tenant money. The companies that lose in our model are the ones that are on the outside of the firewall.
Right.
So we call it commercial firewall. So you don't necessarily have to go through a physical device, but it was a way to explain how the money's flowing in a property.
And I guess that's an interesting conversation because I'm sure, you know, as vendors need to renegotiate contracts or are no longer included in contracts, that's probably a transition that needs to be managed. Do you see, specific areas in which you've seen, best practices to help your, building owners transition from one space to another?
From one vendor to another or one space to another?
Well, I think from one vendor to another as they're,
Sure, we see
finding efficiency.
We see it most drastically in the ISP market, internet service providers. We see it in building management systems or building automation systems.
Right.
And typically because the internet service providers want to, I mentioned you have an apartment building with 150 apartments in it. They want to sell 150 contracts.
Right.
And OpticWise's model, they're going to have one.
Right.
Granted, it's going to be a bigger contract, but it's one. It's not 150. It's more like five. So they're losing some of that revenue and they're going to fight that.
Right.
If you look at the building automation systems, the ones that control the physical systems of the building, you can have, even on small properties, you can have a very cost-effective building automation or building control system, building management. There's a lot of acronyms. They all start with building.
Right.
Once they're in there and they start collecting that data, they don't want to let go. And they tell you, we've got it. Our algorithm has it. And now you don't need your data. Why would you need your data? We don't need it. We'll give you an API and you could integrate to our system. But we believe that you hired that vendor to do their controls, but the data is yours. So why don't you have a copy of the data? I'm not saying fire the vendor. I'm saying have a copy of the data and check their math. Mm-hmm. Check it against your other systems. If they're making an adjustment in the middle of the day and it's 110 degrees outside in Phoenix, why? It's a Sunday. Why can't the building be 80 degrees? Why do you have it set to 70? If somebody's in there, different story.
Right.
You know, because all of the common areas, the heating and the cooling is on the owner. It, you know, It is. Some of it gets shared in an office environment, but the burden of it still comes back to the owner. So if you can reduce your utilities, which are controlled by largely by a building automation system, and they don't want to let go of it. So it goes to access controls. It goes to lighting controls. Access controls are getting in and out of a building. It used to be an old key card. It used to be a physical card before that. Then it turned into a swipe card. And now most of the time it's on your phone and they have some facial recognition ones. There's video security systems. The vendor comes in and wants to wire a whole nother network. Well, they're just IP-based cameras. Why aren't you putting a camera wherever you want and just taking that wire to the nearest switch of the network you already own? Why are you wiring out a whole nother network? We saw just last week, we have a client bringing a brand new building on, about 230,000 square feet. And their video security and access control vendor installed $230,000 worth of equipment that was totally not needed. They just buried it in their contract. And in the hurry of getting it done, one of the partners said, yes, we need that because they were used to it on another building. The other partner didn't know that they already had a digital infrastructure that was fiber-based throughout the whole building. Now they have two of those. One of them is managed and one of them is not.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
love
so it. You're paying for physical hardware. Now you're going to pay for software and maintenance and on another whole fiber copper network that was already there. So
let me ask you a question. You sit in a really unique space, you know, and have a very unique view of everything that's going on. Are there certain things you see coming down the pike that really excite you in terms of technology in the space?
Physical technology? No, I think we have seen a lot of it. What excites me the most is what people and companies are doing with the data, because they can use a lot of this. We can go into existing buildings and existing systems, and it's almost like you give that system a brain so it can start thinking. All it needs to do is accept controls and you can have a brain somewhere else. I say brain, I'm trying to really make this a simple conversation. Like, it's a tool. Any system is a tool. Why don't I use the tool more? Like, I'm really excited about things we can do there. Like I told you about dynamic pricing on a parking deck. Instead of a couple $1,000 a month, people are making 5 digits a month off their parking. And it's an asset they already own. Like to make $10,000 more, that's $100,000 NOI a year on a 6 cap or 7 cap property. That's a lot of money in asset value, not to mention $100,000 a year for the owner. So they could do whatever they want with that. They could diminish common area maintenance with it, which I've seen people do because they're trying to be competitive in the market. So there are some really neat technology around touchless, and not because of fears of disease like pandemic, but right. Touchless as in when I walk up, the access controls knows who I am. And when I sit down, and if you work it's called integrated workplace management. If you sit down and work for a company, when you sit down there, all your settings went with you. You don't have to physically carry your computer around anymore. And when you log in, which is usually your face or your hand, it pulls up and it already knows who you are in your setting. It's a different machine, but you can transplant your user experience wherever you want. Things like that carried throughout an organization across operating and production environments is pretty exciting. And it's all integrated technology and commercial real estate.
Yeah.
So really, I think really we're going to continue to dream up new physical devices, but some of that is like we saw PropTech spike around 2020 and 22. It got overfunded and the value proposition wasn't there. And we're seeing it drop and it is going to come back, but it's coming back as commercial real estate technology. And it's focused largely around operations, around not having as many emissions, like being more cost effective for everybody. These large commercial real estate buildings are big emitters of, and cities like New York are starting to fine for it. Not just managing to be net neutral, but why are you emitting so much? You need to be more efficient. Like
it really sounds like you're in a way democratizing the whole space in terms of making a lot of this available to, smaller owners versus larger organizations and mm-hmm. just making it universally accessible.
That was our intent. We believe rising tide raises all boats. And we even wrote a book. Drew and I wrote a book that's being published in June by Fast Company Press. I was flattered that they wanted to publish it, but we're giving away the playbook on how to do all of this. And I hope that more companies do it. Like, here's how we do it. The audit's in there. The strategies are in there. The five steps, you know, clarify, connect, collect, et cetera, all in optimal control. That's in there. And if you want some help, call us. But this is not meant to be a sales book. It's meant to be a, hey, commercial real estate, look, here's all these industries that do this. It's proven technology. It's just not adopted by our industry. Let's adopt it. Do what portion of it you want. You don't even have to do it all. But digital transformation in this industry is badly needed.
Yeah, what we're going to do, we'll obviously leave a link in the show notes for anybody that would like to reach out. But, very, very much so at that point, I think I would expect the book will probably be there and people can reach out to you for that. But really appreciate the deep dive today. I think
thank you for the time, Michael.
Yeah, a lot of great insight there. For anybody that's been listening to us, this has been Bill Douglas. He's the CEO over at OpticWise, and I appreciate everybody tuning into the Consulting Spotlight today. For anybody that's not aware, we also have two other podcasts in the Software Oasis family. We have Career Spotlight, also on Spotify and Apple, and we have the Software Spotlight. So all three podcasts. And for anybody that wants to keep up to date on what's going on here, you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter, which is at softwareoasis.com/subscribe. So once again, Bill Douglas, CEO over at OpticWise, thanks for joining us on the Career Spotlight today.
All right, thank you again, Michael.
Thanks for tuning in to the Software Oasis Podcast Network. With more than 200,000 listeners each month, you're invited to join our engaged community of B2B founders and executives at our next live full-day Software Oasis virtual AI event with the world's top B2B AI experts. Reserve your comp pass today. Get ahead with real AI strategies. Join the first Thursday of every month. Tap green button at softwareoasis.com or use show notes link to claim your spot today.